Imagine having like the most advanced, ridiculously powerful, billion-dollar V8 engine ever constructed,
Right.
but you can't actually drive the car because the entire planet has completely run out of tires.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
You have all the power in the world and absolutely zero way to, put it to the pavement. And that is exactly what is happening to the global artificial intelligence boom right now.
It really is.
So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are looking at the June 30, 2026 edition of the Techin Morning Briefing. And our mission today for you, the listener, is to decode a series of these just massive half-trillion-dollar bets happening all over the globe.
Yeah, and connecting the dots between them.
Exactly. We're going to figure out how they're actively rewiring the technology you use every single day.
And I have to say, it is a phenomenal stack of sources to go through today. Because, when you look at these updates, and we're spanning space, semiconductors, gaming, cybersecurity, they aren't just like isolated business moves.
Right.
We're really witnessing a fundamental structural shift in how the world actually builds and, well, maintains its most critical infrastructure.
Yeah, and the absolute best place to start is with that that engine and tire problem I mentioned. The tech industry has actually coined this terrifying term for it. They're calling it
Yeah,
Rimageddon.
Macadian. Yeah, it's a great name for a very real crisis.
It is. So looking at the briefing, South Korea, specifically giants like Samsung and SK Hynix, they just announced they are throwing a staggering $518 billion at this problem.
$500 trillion.
Yeah, half a trillion, just to build four brand new memory fabrication plants outside Seoul.
Right.
And they're tossing in another $52 billion just for the packaging of these chips.
Right.
They want to basically control up to 70% of the global market by 2030. So, okay, let's unpack this.
Well, the sheer scale of that capital expenditure is just historic. I mean, it's massive. And the reason they're doing it is because the AI supply chain is literally choking right now.
Because of the memory chips, right?
Exactly. The advanced AI chips that are training these massive models, like the NVIDIA H100s, they are incredibly hungry. A single one of those chips requires anywhere from like 80 to 192 gigabytes of what is called high bandwidth memory, or HBM,
You okay?
and specifically the HBM3E variant, which is just the latest and fastest.
Right. And to make sense of what high bandwidth memory actually is, you can kind of think of standard computer memory like a two-lane road connecting the processor to your data.
Sure.
But HBM is like building a 100-lane superhighway directly on top of the processor itself.
That's a great way to picture it, yeah.
Because the AI chip can do the math instantly, but only if that highway is wide enough to actually feed it the data, right?
Precisely.
And the problem right now is the world is out of concrete for the highway. I mean, prices for these HBM3E chips have tripled to over $1,000 each on the spot market.
It's wild.
And there's a 12 to 18 month backlog just to get your hands on them. But I mean, surely a $500 billion injection from South Korea is going to relieve this pressure for all these AI startups pretty quickly, right?
You would think so, but what's fascinating here is the brutal reality of semiconductor manufacturing.
Yeah.
You cannot just write a check and magically manifest a functioning fab.
Right, it doesn't work that way.
No, not at all. This money does not fix today's problem. It takes 2 to 3 years just to pour the concrete and construct the physical clean rooms,
Just the buildings.
just the buildings. Then it takes another 1 to 2 years to actually ramp up the production volume and get the yield rates right.
Because the manufacturing process is insanely delicate, isn't it?
Extremely. I mean, to build that 100-lane superhighway you mentioned, they use something called through-silicon vias, or TSVs.
Okay, what are those?
Imagine microscopic copper elevators that have to punch perfectly through, like multiple layers of silicon chips stacked on top of each other.
Just to let the data travel vertically.
Exactly. And the nanometer precision required for that is mind-boggling. If a single layer is misaligned by a fraction of a hair, the entire chip goes in the trash.
Oh, wow.
So we are realistically looking at 2028 or 2029 before this $518 billion investment actually hits the market in any meaningful way.
And that timeline is completely warping the venture capital landscape. I mean, the briefing notes that VCs aren't just looking at a startup's engineering talent anymore.
Whoa, they're looking at their supply chain.
Yeah. They are flat out asking, have you secured your compute hardware? If you don't have a guaranteed allocation of memory and GPUs, you do not get funding.
Hardware access has basically become the ultimate business moat. And because supply is so tight, it's actually forcing massive architectural shifts in how these systems are designed.
Really? Like how?
Well, Google, for instance, is actively redesigning its underlying infrastructure to run on 96 gigabyte chips instead of the 192 gigabyte ones.
Just to stretch their supply.
Purely to stretch out their limited supply, yeah.
Mm, that's crazy. And then you have a company like Grok taking it even further. According to the briefing, they are abandoning high bandwidth memory entirely.
Right. They're pivoting.
Yeah. They are pivoting to use SRAM instead. And for anyone wondering if HBM is, you know, a massive data warehouse with a 100-lane highway, SRAM is more like a tiny, hyper-fast workbench sitting right next to the processor.
It's much smaller.
Yeah, it holds way less data, but there is virtually zero latency. So Grok is basically trading memory capacity for absolute speed just to get around this Ramageddon bottleneck entirely.
It is a really fascinating workaround. And, you know, all of this ultra-expensive, hard-to-find silicon, it's all dedicated to powering massive AI models.
Right, which leads us to the next point. If you manage to secure that precious hardware, what are you actually running on it?
Right. What's it for?
Well, you are running the very AI models that are about to radically alter how humans work, specifically how humans write software itself.
This is a huge shift.
It is. The briefing outlines literally the biggest startup acquisition in history. SpaceX and xAI just teamed up to buy AnySphere.
That's the company behind the Cursor AI code editor, right?
Yes, exactly. And they bought it for a record-breaking $60 billion. That is like 30 times their revenue. It completely blows Microsoft's $26 billion GitHub deal out of the water.
It's a massive, massive play to dominate the developer tool space.
Yeah.
Cursor already has over 2 million active developers using it to, you know, write, debug, and refactor code.
Yeah.
And what is most intriguing is their immediate move post-acquisition.
Oh, right. Here's where it gets really interesting. They released an iOS and iPad app.
Yeah.
And I have to be honest with you, I really question the practicality of this. Like, are senior software engineers really going to be sitting on a crowded subway trying to type out complex Python scripts on an iPhone screen?
It sounds awful.
It sounds like a complete nightmare.
Well, if they were typing it manually, yes, it would be impossible. But that actually highlights the exact paradigm shift we are seeing in software development right now.
Okay, how so?
The goal isn't to write code from scratch on a tiny keyboard anymore. Human developers are shifting away from being the mechanics who turn the wrenches, so to speak.
Right.
And they are becoming the managers of autonomous AI agents.
So it sounds less like being a construction worker laying bricks and more like being a building inspector signing off on the AI's work.
Precisely. Huh. The mobile app allows a lead engineer to just review pull requests, monitor multiple AI coding agents as they work in parallel, and just hit, you know, approve or reject on their implementations remotely.
Okay, that makes way more sense. And that explains the $60 billion price tag. I mean, SpaceX and xAI are projecting this AI developer tools market to hit $50 billion annually by 2030.
It's a winner-take-all arena, really. It's driven by network effects.
Right. If Cursor becomes the default way code is written, they just own the entire software pipeline. Mm. But there is a huge hurdle they have to clear first, and that is corporate privacy. Apple, Amazon, several major banks, they have outright banned their employees from using these third-party AI coding tools.
Oh, absolutely. The security risk is huge.
Yeah. Because if your proprietary enterprise code gets sent to a, you know, a cloud server somewhere to be processed by an AI model, you risk exposing your core trade secrets.
Which is exactly why Cursor's current strategy is so sharp. They are aggressively pushing on-premises deployment options right now.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, they're telling these massive enterprise clients, hey, you can run this entire AI infrastructure physically inside your own corporate network. Your code never leaves your private servers.
Wow, that's smart.
It is. It directly addresses that corporate fear of intellectual property leakage, and it basically positions them to steal massive market share from cloud-dependent competitors.
So we have AI pushing the absolute leading edge, writing the future of code at light speed. But there is a really dark irony here. While we are sprinting toward this autonomous future, the legacy software that is actually running the real world today is proving to be incredibly fragile.
The contrast is honestly jarring.
It is. Look at what just happened to Nissan. AI is writing the future, but basic human delays in maintaining legacy systems are causing catastrophic damage right now.
Yeah, let's talk about the Nissan breach.
So Nissan, along with over 100 other organizations, was just compromised by an extortion group known as Shiny Hunters.
Right.
And they did it using a zero-day vulnerability in Oracle PeopleSoft HCM. For those keeping track, the vulnerability is CVE 2026-35273.
And that's a big one.
Massive.
Right.
It carries a maximum 9.8 out of 10 CDSS severity score. Social security numbers, payroll data, banking details, all of it stolen in a matter of hours.
Yeah, to understand the gravity of that, a CVSS score is essentially, well, it's the Richter scale for cyber attacks.
Okay.
A 9.8 is a catastrophic earthquake. That means this vulnerability requires zero authentication to execute.
Wait, really? Zero?
Zero. Anyone on the internet who knows the exploit can just walk right into the database. They don't need a password. They don't need to bypass a firewall.
Wow. And it's a zero day, meaning the hackers found the hole before Oracle even knew it existed.
Right.
But the briefing mentions that Oracle allegedly knew about this active exploit for 13 days before they released a public patch. I mean, wait, a 9.8 out of 10 severity? Anyone on the internet can exploit it without a password, and Oracle knew about it for 13 days.
Yeah, nearly 2 weeks.
How does that happen? Is Oracle just negligent here, or is there an actual reason an enterprise software giant waits almost 2 weeks to patch a hole this massive?
It's not necessarily negligence. It really comes down to a fundamental clash in IT philosophies.
Okay, what do you mean?
Well, Oracle has historically relied on bundling their security fixes into quarterly updates. Their reasoning is that a system like PeopleSoft isn't just an app on your phone, right?
Mm.
It is the central nervous system of a massive corporation.
Right, it's doing payroll for thousands of people.
Exactly. It handles global HR, taxes, payroll. If Oracle rushes out a patch and it accidentally breaks a custom integration in a live production environment, they could literally stop a Fortune 500 company from paying 100,000 employees.
Ouch. Yeah, that would be bad.
So historically, they prioritize extensive testing and backward compatibility over raw speed.
But, I mean, when you are dealing with an active exploit scenario where an automated extortion group like Shiny Hunters is actively scanning the internet and inside systems, a 13-day testing window is basically leaving the vault door wide open, isn't it?
Oh, it completely leaves customers defenseless. The traditional quarterly patch cycle is fundamentally broken in the modern threat landscape.
Yeah.
And the stakes for the victim organizations are existential. I mean, under GDPR, the European data privacy regulations, failing to protect this kind of data can result in fines up to 4% of a company's global annual revenue.
4%? That's huge.
Massive. And that is on top of the millions it costs for credit monitoring and incident response.
Which is why the Tikkun Morning Briefing issued a very urgent, non-negotiable recommendation.
Yes, they did.
If you are running Oracle PeopleSoft right now, you have to patch immediately. You need to review your database access logs, specifically from June 15th to the 28th, to look for unusual queries, and you absolutely must reset all administrative credentials.
Yeah, and this extreme fragility on the ground really highlights a massive dependency problem we have.
How so?
Well, if our terrestrial networks and legacy servers are this vulnerable to disruption, the global AI ecosystem we just talked about, it needs an unbreakable backup.
Which means looking up.
Exactly.
Rocket Lab just announced they are acquiring Iridium Communications for $8 billion, paying $54 a share.
This is a huge move for them.
It is. Iridium operates a constellation of over 75 satellites that provide 100% global coverage. And that includes, like, the North and South Poles and the absolute middle of the ocean.
Everywhere.
Yeah, everywhere. They have 1.5 million subscribers and generated $780 million in revenue in 2025.
It is a transformative acquisition that instantly makes Rocket Lab a vertically integrated space powerhouse. But, you know, this raises an important question.
Right, the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
The SpaceX question.
Yeah.
Because Starlink already has over 6,000 active satellites up there, providing high-speed broadband to millions. So why is Rocket Lab burning $8 billion to buy a legacy network with only 75 satellites? It kind of feels like bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It seems that way on the surface. Mm-hmm. Until you look at the physics of the different networks,
yeah,
you really have to separate the consumer market from the mission-critical enterprise market here.
Okay, break that down for me.
So Starlink is incredible for consumer broadband. It operates on higher frequencies to deliver massive speed. But those higher frequencies can suffer from what's called rain fade.
Like they get blocked by bad weather.
Exactly, they get blocked by heavy weather. Iridium, on the other hand, serves a completely different market. They use a lower frequency L-band that physically punches through hurricanes, blizzards, and massive storms without ever dropping the signal.
So what does this all mean? It's basically a trade-off between absolute speed and absolute reliability.
Exactly. Iridium provides the connectivity for maritime shipping, commercial aviation, military operations, and remote IoT sensors.
Right.
In those industries, you do not care if you can stream a 4K movie. You care that a life-saving telemetry signal from a ship in the Arctic gets through a hurricane perfectly every single time.
And from a purely business strategy perspective, it seems like Rocket Lab's CEO, Peter Beck, is solving a massive financial problem for his company.
Oh, absolutely.
Because the commercial launch-only market is facing brutal downward pricing pressure right now. SpaceX's reusable Falcon 9 rockets are just so cheap to fly.
Yeah, you can't compete on launch price alone anymore.
Right. If Rocket Lab only relies on launching rockets for other people, they will eventually bleed out. But by buying Iridium, they secure nearly $1 billion in highly predictable recurring subscription revenue every single year.
It's brilliant.
They basically just bought themselves the cash flow engine needed to fund the development of their massive next generation Neutron rocket.
But, you know, with Rocket Lab scaling up and SpaceX and Amazon filling the sky with thousands of these critical satellite networks, it brings up a very real environmental and economic issue.
Space junk.
Basically, yeah. What happens when these multi-million dollar assets run out of fuel or just get old? We have decades of hardware floating up there, and we just cannot keep treating low Earth orbit like a disposable junkyard anymore.
Which leads us to a story straight out of science fiction today.
This is one of my favorites.
It's so cool. NASA is launching a $30 million orbital servicing mission.
Yeah.
They are taking a Catalyst space servicing vehicle, launching it on a Pegasus XL rocket, and sending it to physically rendezvous in orbit with the Neil Gehrels Swift Observatory.
And Swift is not a new satellite.
No. Swift is a massive telescope launched way back in 2004. It has been up there for over 20 years detecting gamma ray bursts. But its orbit is decaying.
Right, it's falling.
So this Catalyst vehicle is going to autonomously fly up to Swift, physically grab it with robotic arms, and fire its own thrusters to boost the telescope's orbit by 50 kilometers.
It's incredible.
It really is. This will extend the observatory's life by another 5 to 7 years. It's basically like sending an autonomous AAA tow truck into the vacuum of space to jumpstart a $500 million Ferrari and doing it for just $30 million.
That is a perfect way to visualize it.
Yeah.
And honestly, the scientific value of saving the Swift Observatory cannot be overstated here.
What exactly does it do that's so important?
Well, when a massive star collapses, or when neutron stars collide, they emit these massive gamma ray bursts. Swift has detected over 1,600 of them.
Wow.
Yeah, and it can autonomously pivot its instruments within seconds to catch these events and then alert observatories all over the world. It is our primary early warning system for the most energetic cosmic events in the universe.
And if we just let it fall.
If we let Swift burn up in the atmosphere, we lose that capability completely, and it would take years and hundreds of millions of dollars to build and launch a replacement.
But this $30 million mission isn't just about saving one telescope, is it? It's a proof of concept.
Precisely. It proves the viability of the entire future space economy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if autonomous rendezvous and servicing can be done safely, it fundamentally changes the math of satellite operations.
How so?
Well, instead of abandoning a billion-dollar communications satellite just because it ran out of the small amount of fuel it uses to keep its position, you simply send up a tanker and refuel it.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Yeah. NASA estimates that the widespread adoption of satellite servicing, repairing, and deorbiting could save the space industry over $100 billion annually by 2035.
That is wild. And, you know, from orbital tow trucks moving $500 million satellites down to the devices in our living rooms, all of this massive innovation, the extreme silicon manufacturing, the AI integration, the power management, it all eventually trickles down and scales into consumer hardware.
It always does.
And the gaming industry is about to see a massive leap because of this. PlayStation CEO Hideaki Nishino recently gave an interview where he strongly hinted that the upcoming PS6 could be a hybrid console.
Yeah. He's specifically used the phrase offering a seamless experience beyond the living room, which, I mean, that heavily echoes the strategy behind the Nintendo Switch.
Right.
And the Switch is an absolute juggernaut, having sold over 143 million units.
But looking at the physics of this rumor, how is that actually possible? I mean, PlayStation's entire brand identity is built on high-end AAA games, 4K graphics, ray tracing, and photorealism.
Sure.
Sony already tried portable gaming with the PS Vita years ago, and it failed. It only sold 15 million units.
Yeah.
Can you really shove the thermal requirements of a PlayStation 5 into a battery-powered brick without it melting in your hands?
Well, you cannot bend the laws of physics, and thermal constraints are a very real barrier. However, you have to look at how dramatically mobile processor architectures have evolved recently.
Like what?
Take AMD's recent Strix Point mobile chips. They have integrated neural processing units and highly efficient core designs to the point where a mobile chip can now deliver performance that rivals heavy desktop-class GPUs from just a few years ago.
Really?
Yeah, they can run demanding PC games smoothly without needing a massive cooling fan.
So the strategy would likely be a hybrid dock system then. Like when you are plugged into wall power at home, the base station pushes the thermals to render in full 4K.
Exactly.
But when you pull it out of the dock to take it on the train, it dynamically scales the resolution down to 1080p to save the battery.
That is the most logical architectural approach. And think about the market disruption this causes. I mean, in the current console generation, PlayStation is already dominating Xbox with roughly 65 million units sold compared to Xbox's 30 million.
Yeah, it's not even close right now.
Right. So if Sony adopts this hybrid model, they put unprecedented pressure on the upcoming Nintendo Switch 2.
Because suddenly, gamers do not have to choose between playing high-end cinematic exclusives and having portability. You get both in one system.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it also completely disrupts the emerging PC handheld market, which is currently ruled by the Steam Deck.
Oh, true.
A massive segment of gamers want portability, sure, but they want the closed ecosystem simplicity of a console, not the endless tweaking and complexity of a PC.
Mm.
If Sony can execute this hardware efficiently, and given the current leaps in semiconductor efficiency we've talked about, they could unify the entire high-end portable and living room markets into one single device.
It is staggering to step back and look at the sheer scale of the ground we cover today. I mean, we started with South Korea pouring $518 billion into the ground just to manufacture the physical HBM memory chips required to keep the AI boom alive.
Yep.
We saw how those AI models are powering a $60 billion acquisition of Cursor, shifting human engineers from being mechanics to being managers of AI agents. We looked at the terrifying reality of CVSS 9.8 zero-day vulnerabilities in our legacy systems, proving the need for unbreakable networks.
Which led us to space.
Exactly. Leading directly to Rocket Lab's $8 billion move to buy Iridium's weather-punching satellite constellation. We discuss NASA's $30 million orbital tow truck, proving we can sustainably maintain all this hardware in space. And finally, how those massive silicon breakthroughs might put a PS6 right into your backpack.
It is a remarkable web of interconnected macro investments reshaping daily life. But before we wrap up, there is one final forward-looking thought that kind of bridges our first two discussions.
Oh, lay it on me.
Well, we talked about how humans are transitioning to become mere reviewers of AI code using tools like Cursor.
Right.
And we also discussed the massive physical and engineering challenges of designing those nanometer precision HBM memory chips, the Ramageddon bottleneck.
Yeah, the through silicon vias and all that.
Exactly. So consider what happens when the incredibly advanced AI coding agents running on platforms like Cursor are tasked with optimizing the architectural designs for the very silicon needed to run them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. We are standing on the precipice of a self-accelerating loop, an era where AI designs the hardware that makes itself smarter, bypassing the limits of human engineering entirely. When the bottleneck is no longer human intelligence, but simply the time it takes to pour the concrete for the fabrication plants,
The
pace of change will be unlike anything humanity has ever experienced.
Now that is an incredible thought to chew on. The AI designing the tires for its own supercar. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the massive tech shifts happening around you. Keep looking for those connections, and we'll catch you on the next one.